want to go to the Gospel of Mark, chapter 1 tonight. Mark 1. Title of the message this evening, The Leper That Disobeyed. The Leper That Disobeyed. The main part of the sermon will come from verse 40 to 45. But let me give you kind of a background. This is the same John Mark, the one that penned this little gospel here. It is the same one that quit the ministry in Acts 13. You had that first missionary journey, and you had Barnabas and Paul. John Mark was with them, but he got homesick, got scared. I don't really know why he left, but I know that he quit. And the next time they were going to go on that second journey, there was a dissension between Barnabas and Paul because Barnabas wanted him to go again. Paul said, no way. This is the same guy. Now, that tells me a lot of things. Just because somebody quits does not mean that God's through with them. There's been a lot of people that have walked away from the Lord in a fit of disobedience or anger, only to repent later and the Lord used them in a mighty way. The story of Mark is one that I really kind of like. I like to get to the story, the crux of the matter, pretty quick. Now, you read Luke, you read Matthew, John to a certain degree, and sometimes they lay out a lot of stuff. But when you're in the Gospel of Mark, you'll notice that he's pretty fast. As a matter of fact, two of the favorite words that he uses in his Gospels are things like straightway, immediately. And so he doesn't dwell on details like the other Gospel writers do, but he is a writer that he wants to get the point across and get it across quick. Now, where he got that from, I'm not really sure. It could be that he got it from Peter. If you get into any type of deep dive with the Gospel of Mark, one of the things that you will notice is that Peter is dominant in this gospel. It seems as though that Peter actually spent quite a bit of time with this young man, just like Paul spent time with Timothy and with Titus. It seems as though that Peter spent some time with John Mark. And so he is giving us the beginning of the ministry of the Lord Jesus. I want you to look with me at verse 9 of chapter 1. This is just background. We're not to the leper yet, but we'll get there. It says, and it came to pass in those days that Jesus came from Nazareth of Galilee and was baptized of John in Jordan. And so we see that he is going from Nazareth, which was his childhood home, even his early 20s, that's his home. He is a carpenter by trade. He was taught that from his stepfather, Joseph. Now, of course, he knew all along he was not going to be a carpenter. He knew he was going to die. He knew that he came to die. And so you have Jesus, and he goes from Nazareth to John, who's baptizing in the Jordan. That is about 90 miles. When somebody asked me, they said, do you think that baptism is really important? I absolutely think it's important. Not only is it commanded after a person gets saved, but the example that Jesus gave was he walked 90 miles to be baptized. That's a long way. That's 3.5 days in biblical days walking. A man could walk about 20 miles in a day. And so 90 miles, if I'm doing my math right, that's what, 4.5? Does that sound right? Okay. And so you've got Jesus and he walks 4.5 days to be baptized. Now, it's not just a simple baptism. I mean, this is a baptism, and this is going to kick off what we call his ministry. For over 3 years, he will minister in various areas. This early part of his ministry is called the Galilean ministry. It's in the northern part of the nation. And so with the Galilean ministry is about to kick off here. Now, I want you to look with me at verse 21. And in verse 21, it says, and they, talking about the disciples that he has called, it says, and they went into Capernaum. Now, there's some commentators that like to connect Capernaum with the Old Testament prophet Nahum. The only thing that I know of that's close is the spelling. But it doesn't necessarily mean that Capernaum was named after that Old Testament prophet. Could be, but there's really no historical connection that I'm aware of, other than that the names are very, very close as far as the spelling there. And what does he do? When he gets to Capernaum, it says, straightway on the Sabbath day, he entered into the synagogue and taught. Now, I have been to this synagogue. Now, the rocks that I have walked on, those rocks that have been chiseled and hewn, those are not the exact rocks that Jesus walked on. But you can see the two different synagogues that were there. If you stand there at the front left corner, as you're going to walk in the front doors, you look down to your left, and there are two rows of rocks that are there. One of them is black. That is the one on the bottom. The black rock was the foundation of the synagogue that Jesus taught in this story right here. Above the black is more of a traditional stone color, got a little gray to it. That was the synagogue that was 1,000 years after Christ. But you can see the synagogue that is still standing to this day in Capernaum. Now, most people think that verse 21 is it's the beginning of the public ministry. Now, we don't really know what Jesus did before he began to publicly minister. My guess is that he was always guiding his mom, probably his stepdad until he passed. And we think, because we don't hear a whole lot about Joseph later on, we think that he probably had died. You know, the longevity of men, especially in those days, was not really that long. People weren't living into the, you know, to the 90s. A dear friend of mine, his father passed away. They'll have his funeral on Tuesday. His dad was 91. Well, we have a lot of men in our church that are well into their 90s. And so in biblical times, though, when you were 60, you were about done. And so you've got him there in Capernaum. And so when he teaches in this first synagogue that we know publicly, they're astonished at his doctrine. He teaches them as one having authority and not like the scribes. And so we see that things began to happen. So he has been baptized by John. He has called his disciples. Now he has gone to Capernaum, and now he begins to do miracles. What is happening here? Well, again, quick hitter type thing. We read that one of the first things that Mark records, we know it's not the first miracle. That was the miracle at the wedding in Cana of Galilee, when he takes the water and turns it into wine. But this is the first miracle that he mentions here at Capernaum. And what is that? Well, he cast out a demon. Then he goes to Peter's home. Peter's mother-in-law is sick. He heals her of some fever that had debilitated her. And you keep reading about these different things. You read verse 32, you see that it says, "And at even, when the sun did set, they brought him unto all that were diseased and them that were possessed of devils. And all the city was gathered together at the door." So you've got Jesus at Peter's house. The whole city has heard about the mother-in-law. By the way, that should tell you that he wasn't the first pope. He was married, all right? You've got Peter's mother-in-law that's healed. People are being healed from demon possession. People are lined up at the door, and he's healing many of them with divers or various diseases. He's casting out devils, suffering the devils not to speak because they knew him. And so you find Jesus, and immediately he's beginning to help people. Well, he's preaching in their synagogues. Look with me at verse 39. "And he preached in their synagogues throughout all Galilee and cast out devils." Evidently, Galilee had a lot of devils in there, all right? And so that brings us up to our text for tonight. And I want you to remember that this is the very beginning of his ministry. He's going to have a little over 3 years of ministry, and everything that he is doing is taking him toward that destination. And so tonight, I want us to remember this. You and I can identify in this story. You say, what do you mean by that? Look at verse 40. "And there came a leper to him, beseeching him." We'll stop there for the moment. There are two people in this story. And do you know that ultimately that's what it all gets down to in a person's life? It comes down to two people. It's not you and your spouse. It's not you and your child. It's not you and a sibling. It's you and Jesus. That's what it all gets down to. I don't know how many times in the last 10 years I've said something like this: God has no grandkids. I was listening to a preacher preach the other day, and he was talking about the Old Testament covenant and how that the patriarchs and some of those Old Testament men, how that they were men, and the covenant that they had with God covered their kids. And they said because of the circumcision, that gave them basically salvation. And I'm going, circumcision set them apart. The Jews did that. Heathen did not do that. But there were a lot of people in those Jewish families that were hellions. You think about that. You think about David. I think that David was one of the great heroes of the Old Testament. David was a man after God's own heart, the Bible tells us. But I'm telling you, he had some lousy kids. Does that mean that David was a lousy man? No, it doesn't. Now, he had some issues, but he loved God. But Absalom, I don't think, loved God. I don't think that Amnon loved God. I think that that sometimes people have external things that go on, but internally there's been no change. Paul talks about our hearts ought to be circumcised, and that's exactly right. But I was listening to this man preach, and he was talking about how that infant baptism in the New Testament is like the Old Testament circumcision. And immediately went to Acts 16 and talked about household baptism. And I'm not going to rehash that. I've talked to you two or three times about that in the last 10 years. But basically, you have to read into that text. When it says household, you have to read into it infant, because it's not in the text. Household could be that there was a house full of teenagers. It could be that it was a house that had many servants. So let's not jump the shark on that one. But the point I'm trying to make is, ultimately, God has no grandkids. My three children had to come to Christ individually. They didn't get to go to heaven because their daddy's a preacher. I've got four wonderful grandkids. The three older ones have made professions of faith in Christ. They could not come because I'm their granddaddy. They had to come individually. It was just them and Jesus. And here in our story, that's where we're at. You have a man, and he has no hope except for another man that has the power to heal him, and that's what we see. I want you to look with me at maybe three questions. What do we know? Well, we know what's in the text. We're going to look at verse 40 again, and it says, there came a leper to him. Now, what do we know about that? I want you to go to Leviticus 13, 45 and 46. Now, there's many more verses about leprosy in Leviticus, but we're just going to kind of hone in on these two. All right? Leviticus 13, 45, 46. I'll give it just a minute for it to come up. If not, I'll flip over. And I've already got it marked in my Bible if I need to flip over and read it. There we go. And the leper in whom the plague is, his clothes shall be rent or torn, his head bare, and he shall put a covering upon his upper lip. Right here. All right. Think COVID mask. And shall cry. That doesn't mean, bawl. It means to cry out, yell out. Unclean, unclean. Verse 46. And all the days wherein the plague shall be in him, he shall be defiled. He is unclean. He shall dwell alone. Without the camp shall be, or shall his habitation be. So in other words, when you think about what we know, is we know that this man has got a disease. There's nothing that he can do about it. There's nothing anybody else can do about it. And if he does not act a certain way, then people will stone him to death. As long as he lives apart from them, as long as there is some isolation, they will let him live. But they know how contagious this disease is. And so when you read this story, it says there came a leper to him. I want you to know that he did not get to come into the city of Capernaum. I want you to go back with me to verse 37. Jesus has gone out to pray by himself early in the morning, probably got up before daylight, went out of the city of Capernaum into a solitary place. Now, when the sun came up, everybody starts coming to the front door again where he was at the night before. When he had been healing these people at Peter's home, that's where they are now congregating again. But Jesus is not there. They're calling for him, Rabbi, 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 come on, come on, help us, help us. I mean, there's more today than there were yesterday. But Jesus is not there. He has gone outside of the city. He has gone to a solitary place, and he is praying. But when you come to verse 37, it says, and when they had found him in the solitary place, they said unto him, all men seek for thee. In other words, everybody in town is looking for you. But where do we find Jesus after they say this to him? Look at verse 38. He said unto them, let us go into the next towns, that I may preach there also. For therefore came I forth. Verse 39, he preaches in the synagogues throughout all of Galilee and cast out devils. And so you have Jesus, he has left Capernaum, he has gone to pray, the disciples find him, and he goes, well, we're not going back to Capernaum right now. We're going to some other places. And as he is going from town to town to town, he is preaching in their synagogues. Now, every town that had at least 10 families with a man that was in charge of the families, they would be able to have a synagogue that would be authorized by the temple that was in Jerusalem. And so you've got this traveling entourage now. You've got the disciples. They are walking with Christ. He is going, but all of a sudden he is confronted by this man. This leper, he came to him. And when the leper comes, he's sick. His clothes are torn. He's got a mask over his face. He's probably got ragged pieces of cloth that dangle from his fingers, and if he's got fingers. And he just kind of comes up to Jesus, and you know what Jesus does? He does not turn him away. Get away from me. I had that happen several times back whenever the pandemic was supposedly in full swing. And I went to my doctor during a time I was supposed to be at a regular physical. And I'm sitting there, and he goes, you had a shot? And I said, no. Why not? I don't think it's had enough time to really find out what the effects are. Oh, it's safe. I said, how do you know? He goes, well, it's safe. I said, there's not enough time for research. Are you going to get it? Nope. Put your mask on. Even the doctor was scared. I said, Doc, you know, I trust you in a lot of things, but you're not the Lord. And he goes, put your mask on. And so he gave me a physical with my mask on. I don't think he put the tongue depressor on my tongue that time. But he was a little concerned. You don't find that in Jesus. He wasn't concerned one little bit about him receiving this disease, even though it was highly contagious. This disease of leprosy, it's a horrible thing. Now, let me just say this. It is not the worst of diseases as far as death. I mean, you can have cancer and die quicker than you can from leprosy. You can have kidney failure and die quicker than you do of leprosy. You can have a lot of things that will kill you faster than leprosy will. But make no mistake about it, leprosy is deadly. It is absolutely deadly. I came across the story, and I don't have any idea how long ago it was. My guess is that it probably was 100 years ago. That would be my best guess. Neighborhood guess. Big neighborhood. All right? Big neighborhood. That's like whenever preachers get together. You know, how many you got in Sunday school? Well, I got about 1,000. Really? You got that many? Yes, in the neighborhood of 1,000. And then it's like, but it's a real big neighborhood. After COVID, I told people, said, you know, we're comfortably filled on Sunday. What do you mean by that? That means everybody could lay down and take a nap if they wanted to. Comfortably filled. And so you've got Jesus, and he knows what's happening with this man. But the man that I was telling you about from 100 years ago, his name is Dr. Paul Brand, and he termed or coined this little phrase. It's called a painless hell. Anybody ever heard that phrase? A painless hell. Let me tell you what it is. He dealt with leprosy and trying to help people with this. One of the things that he would do is when a man or a woman would come to him, he would send them home with a cat. You say, why a cat? Well, in times before now, one of the things that was a really, really big issue was rats and mice. Do you know that in kings and queens' palaces, that was a problem? Those rats didn't care that guy had a crown on his head. Those mice didn't care, that there were a bunch of guards walking around. All they're doing is they're thinking, what am I going to eat? And when these people that had leprosy would go back to their place of isolation and they had the cat would keep the rats and the mice from chewing their digits while they were sleeping because the people wouldn't feel it. There is a numbness that comes with leprosy. Can I tell you that leprosy is a good picture of sin? There's a numbness about it. And so you've got this man, he's got really not any much interaction unless he's in a colony. But he knows that Jesus is going from place to place to place. And so there came a leper to him. So we know that about the man. So what did the man find? Well, if you look, you will find that verse 40 says that he found Jesus and he immediately begged, knelt down, and he said to him, if thou wilt, thou canst make me clean. So what he found was he found the person that he knew could help him if he would. How does he know? Well, you'll see this again at the later part of the verses tonight. But one of the things that happens is you have advertising that goes forth when something happens in a certain place. Kids on the internet, whenever they have something with a TikTok or an Instagram, some type of video, they call that going viral. All right? By the way, let me see how I want to say this. How many of you guess what the number one video that we have ever put out? What do you think the number one video is? How many of you remember Helen Yarborough? Helen Yarborough was a little redheaded woman, worked in this church for years and years and years, taught Sunday school, worked in Awana. She's got over 1,000 views with her video. What about the second highest? I thought that this one was the first highest. Now, we're talking about a video channel on YouTube that's got probably 200 or 300 sermons on it that your preachers preached, all right? I mean, there's a bunch of them there. If I got something going viral, that means 50 people's watched it. Helen Yarborough has 1,000. Daryl Wade's got 250. His funeral. Ralph Sexton, he's got maybe a couple that's got 70 or 80. But the point is, when somebody hears about it, they've been influenced by somebody like Helen. I remember her. And you got people all over that scattered from Dan to Beersheba. And she's taught them in Sunday school. She talked to them or taught them in Awana. She did all these things. And now these kids heard about it. What do they do? Well, I'm going to watch and see Miss Helen's funeral. I remember when Daryl had Sunday school. I'm gonna watch that funeral. You know, and you have these people, and word of mouth passes that along. Networking. That's what's happening here. This man has lived in this colony, and he's hearing these stories. I don't know how far this village is that he's in, this little colony town, or colony of lepers. You know, I don't know. I just know that he finds Jesus because he's heard the stories. He's heard about the demon-possessed people that have been helped. He's heard about Peter's mother-in-law, fever. He's heard about all these other people knocking on the door, and he helps all of them. And he's thinking, I need help. And so he found the Lord. He knelt down. And so one of the things that I think is kind of curious, the disciples are not mentioned here. I don't know if the disciples have decided that they're going to go on a hike, but I know that when you're looking at this story, you only see two people. You don't find anybody with their mouth, you know, open going, look at him deal. You don't see any of that. And so he found Jesus. And one of the things that I think is beautiful is that Jesus reaches out in verse 41 with compassion, and he puts his hand on him and he touches him. Do you know one of the beautiful things about being a human is being able to interact with others and have the human touch? That's one of the reasons why I think it's a good thing for men to have the right hand of Christian fellowship. I think that's why it's a good thing when people embrace. Now, most of the time when we men embrace, we start beating each other on the back to make sure everybody knows we're okay. But you got the human touch. I didn't mention this morning, but I think that's one of the things that is going to be the death of all of humanity. You got people that have a better relationship with some type of robot than they do with a human. That's awful. And so you've got Jesus, and he reaches out and he touches him and he heals him. So what we know he's a leper. We know he had some problems. We know that he found Jesus, but there's something else. What did the man do? What did he do? Look with me beginning in verse 43. Well, Jesus straightly charged him and forthwith sent him away. In other words, we've got some other places to go. So what you need to do is this. You listen to me now. Now, after I tell you this, then you got to go. And this is what you've got to do. Verse 44, and he saith unto him, see thou say nothing to any man, but go thy way, show thyself to the priest, and offer for thy cleansing those things which Moses commanded for a testimony unto them. Now, who's the them? Well, if you go back, and again, we're not going to go back to it, but you can read about it in Leviticus. You can see how that when a leper was cleansed, he had to go and basically get signed off on by a priest. They looked at him. They observed him for days and days and days. And then finally, whenever that skin disease that he had was determined that it was not, you know, contagious any longer, usually whenever that happened, it was not full-blown leprosy. But if it was full-blown leprosy, then you had to go. If there was something miraculous that happened, you had to go, and they had to sign off on it. And so he says, you go your way, and you go show yourself to the priest. Well, where would that have been? Well, it would have been probably Jerusalem. That's where the majority of the priests were at, was in Jerusalem. Now, you'd have some that do some traveling, and they would be moving around from place to place. But you've got that command in the Old Testament. And so Moses commanded that. But what does the man do? But he went out, began to publish it much, in verse 45, and to blaze abroad the matter. There's nothing here that says that he was doing this on his way to the temple. There's nothing that says that he was on his way to Jerusalem. Something miraculous had happened to him, and all he's thinking is, I got to tell somebody. I got to tell it. And you and I, if we really think about it, we're this man. It was just you and Jesus, and in my case, it was me and Jesus. We couldn't save ourselves, but Jesus could. We had no other place to go except him, and so we came. We accepted Christ. He changed our lives, forgave us of our sin, and we've never been the same. The day I got saved was one of the most exciting days of my life. Now, I've had other exciting days, and it's kind of hard to put them in a balance there. The most important day in my life was that day. But there's been some other days when I've experienced great elation, just like I did that day. But the thing is, we lose it. When you got saved, were you willing to do anything that Jesus asked you to do? I was. I would read verses in the Bible. Things like, whosoever believeth on me shall not be ashamed. And I would get on my knees when I'm praying. I'm going, dear God, help me to witness to everybody that I can find, because I don't want to be ashamed of you. Why is that? Because that salvation was so fresh. There was something on the inside knowing, man, he saved me. I'm getting to go to heaven. Don't have to go to hell. Man, that's a good deal. And I was elated. And I wanted to do everything that I could to try to please the Lord. And so, whosoever believeth on him shall not be ashamed. And so, I would make it a point to speak to people. The day I got saved, I told my parents immediately. I began to talk to my friends. Some of them thought I was nuts. Some of them still think I'm nuts. But I want you to know that whatever happened to me that day was a good thing. And what happened to you on your day was a good thing. And we ought to want to tell everybody about it. And what does this guy do? He's publishing it. Now, that doesn't mean that Gutenberg was around and that he was publishing, you know, God's simple plan of salvation on it. Publish means to tell it with your mouth. If you ever see any of the things like during the Roman times, the Greek times, think Spartacus, all right? Think that. I remember Tony Curtis played that, but I couldn't tell you the story. All right? What do? They stand up on a wagon, they stand up on a rock, and they begin to say, hear ye, the great Julius Caesar wants to say this, and would give a quote from Caesar. And you would have that publishing. And the next thing you know, it goes in one person's ears. And the next thing, they go somewhere a block down the road. Let me tell you what I just heard. And then that goes to somebody else. Let me tell you what I just heard. And that is what's happening here. Now, Jesus tells him not to do that. Why? Why would Jesus tell him to don't tell any man anything, go and show yourself to the priest, and offer yourself, you know, for a test case so that you can show them that you're cleansed? So why would Jesus tell him that? Well, I think that Jesus has a timetable. When was this taking place? The beginning of his ministry. Now, if he began to cause a stir this early, maybe the timing would not be what it needed to be. And so he was maybe trying to maybe be a little proactive. And so he is saying, hey, I want you to do what Moses commanded. And so if he goes to the priest and they see him and he is cleansed And they go through all of their rituals, days and days and days, and all of the things that he had to do. And he comes out and he is, you know, clean as the driven snow. Then all of a sudden they go, all right, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. But if he begins to publish it like he did, before long the word gets out. And the next thing you know, there's an upstart up in the Galilee. He's causing trouble, and you don't cause Rome trouble. If you want to be taken care of in a permanent way, cause Rome some problems. They're professional killers. They have professional techniques. The greatest killing machine army that has ever been in those ancient times was the Romans. They were better than the Greeks, and they were better than the Persians, and they were better than the Babylonians, and they were better than the Assyrians. They were the number one killing army in ancient history. They did not have bombs and planes like we do today, but if you want to have hand-to-hand combat and open warfare on a battlefield somewhere, you don't want to do it with the Romans. And so Jesus is saying, let's not cause any problem right now. My time is not yet. He came in the fullness of time, according to Galatians 4:4. When he was born, it was exactly the right time. But in John, I think it's chapter 18, I believe it is, he says this, my time has not yet come. So in other words, there was a timetable that Jesus was operating on, and he wanted to tell this man, don't mess the time frame up. Did the man listen? No, he doesn't. Only thing he knows is he was sick and he feels good. He was sick, now he is healed. He was lost, he is found. He doesn't have to live in isolation anymore. If he has a family, he can go back home and hug his kids. He can go back home and he can embrace his wife. He can go love his mama if she's still living. He is healed, and he's excited about that. So, do I think that the Lord popped him for this? Probably not. When we get saved, we're babies in Christ, and we don't know everything. He probably had no idea why Jesus was saying this, but he's thinking, Jesus has got to be wrong. As good as I've got it right now, I got to tell everybody. And so, he published it, he ablazed it everywhere. Well, what happened after he did that? Well, read the last part of it. He's not in the city. He's not at the amphitheater, you know, in downtown Capernaum. They don't have one of those, by the way. They do have one in Caesarea, but not in Capernaum. They don't have the theater rented out so that he can be there. No, he's out in the desert places. He's in the wilderness areas. He's in the mountains around the Sea of Galilee. That's where he's at. And here he is out in the woods, so to speak, out in the desert area, and they came to him from every quarter. Every place that there were people that were hurting, they heard, well, Jesus is over there. It's such and such. And they went there. How did they hear about that? Guys like this. One other guy that did the exact same thing, Maniac of Gadara. Happened to him. Several times in the early ministry of Christ, he would say, don't tell anybody. I've heard people say, well, the Lord told him that because he was using reverse psychology. Good theory. Don't know that for sure, but I know this. I know that he was one time a leper, and then instantly he was not. And I know one time I was a lost, hell-bound sinner, and instantly I was not. And that's your testimony as well. And when it comes right down to it, it's you and it's Jesus, and that transaction that makes all the difference.